ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
What is the verse today?
Athahabhavathava mahimamritaras samudra vipusha sukrid avalidaya. Therefore, O killer of the Madhu demon, incessant transcendental bliss flows in the minds of those who have even once tasted but a drop of the nectar from the ocean of your glories. Such exalted devotees forget the tiny reflection of so-called material happiness produced from the material senses of sight and sound. Free from all desires, such devotees are the real friends of all living entities, offering their minds unto you and enjoying transcendental bliss, they are expert in achieving the real goal of life. O Lord, you are the soul and dear friend of such devotees who never need return to this material world. How could they give up engagement in your devotional service? Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Although non-devotees, because of their meager knowledge and speculative habits, cannot understand the real nature of the Lord, a devotee who has once tasted the nectar from the Lord's lotus feet can realize what transcendental pleasure there is in the Lord's devotional service. A devotee knows that simply by rendering service to the Lord, he serves everyone. Therefore, devotees are real friends to all living entities. Only a pure devotee can preach the glories of the Lord for the benefit of all conditioned souls. Om Akyantimidandasya Jnananjana Chalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Jutha Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakanvitamscha. He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanshakalpatarubhyascha Kripasindubhya Evacha Patithanam Bhavanibhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hari Hari, Hari Rama, Hari Rama, Rama Rama, Hari Hari. Therefore, O killer of the Madhu demon, incessant transcendental bliss flows in the minds of those who have even once tasted but a drop of the nectar from the ocean of your glories. Such exalted devotees forget the tiny reflection of so-called material happiness produced from the material senses of sight and sound. Free from all desires, such devotees are the real friends of all living entities, offering their minds unto you and enjoying transcendental bliss. They are expert in achieving the real goal of life. O Lord, you are the sole and dear friend of such devotees who never need to return to this material world. How could they give up engagement in your devotional service? We are reading today from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 9. The Appearance of the Demon Vritrasura, Text 39. This story from Srimad Bhagavatam is filled with crucial lessons for those on the path of pure devotion. The very structure of the story in which the teachings are revealed tell us so much about what we should aspire for, what we should be aware of. We could begin from so many different places. It's a really complex story. But in this particular verse, the devas are praying to the Supreme Lord Vishnu. they have realization of how powerful the inclination for enjoyment is within this material world. The mind and the senses are craving for pleasure and fearful of anything that will interfere with whatever pleasure there is. And these great souls offering these prayers, by the power of their austerities, by the power of their charity and good works, they have attained a karma where there is immense pleasures, millions of times greater than what we can acquire in our little human existence on this earth. But yet they understand, and they have experience, that no amount of temporary pleasure could ever satisfy the heart. The reason? Because the eternal soul, the true self, is Satchidananda, eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss, has an eternal relationship with the Supreme Absolute Truth, Krishna, who is all attractive. And the flow of love between the soul and Krishna is unlimited and forever. Forgetful of that, we are trying to find an alternative experience of happiness through rubbing the senses and the mind against objects. Whether it be gross objects that we can touch or feel or smell or hear, or subtle objects like adoration, distinction, control. But always hungry for more, never satisfied. The Gita tells us when a fire is burning, if you put fuel in the fire, it appears that the fire is subdued until the fuel is consumed, then the fire becomes hungrier than ever before. That is the nature of this world. And they have been put into a most critical, dangerous condition because of their egoistic desire to try to enjoy within this world. And now they are praying to the Lord that if we could simply taste a single drop of the nectar of loving service to you, then all the so-called pleasures of this material world become utterly insignificant. And the particular situation that they're appealing to the Lord because of is an incredible, unconquerable, massive demon named Vritrasura that has attacked them. He's so huge and he's so powerful that there is nothing that they could possibly do to withstand his prowess. They're about to lose all their property, their families. They're about to lose their lives. And although they're very, very great conquerors, they're devas, there's nothing they could do except turn to God, which is actually the only thing anybody can ever do at any time that has any substantial, lasting effect on protecting us. Yes, we may call the police if some burglar comes to our house, and the police may or may not be able to stop the crime. But meanwhile, the power of time at the time of the crime, is diminishing your life second by second by second. You're growing old. You're going to die. You're going to lose everything. Whoever you are, whatever you're doing. So really, the only protection in this world is when we take shelter of the Lord, then by the Lord's grace, delivers us from this whole illusion of material existence, awakens our eternal soul. So the devas are really in a predicament. It's not something they could just go to a meeting and discuss for, you know, several weeks of what are we going to do about this. This massive personality is right now, he's so big, he's stepping on them like ants and crushing them. Yes? And he's right on top of them. So what are they going to do? They all turn to God. The only real solution. They surrendered. And it's interesting to understand where this Vritrasura has come from. There's a common saying, you cannot judge a book by looking at its cover. This is a most graphic example of that, on the highest level of transcendence. There was a king named Chitraketu. He was a very great, pious, religious man. And he needed a son to be the next king, because that was the tradition in those days. In fact, just 3 days ago, I was with a musician, and he told me that he was in a country which has a king, and there was a big marriage. It was Monte Carlo. There was a big, big marriage, and this band came, an American band came to play for their marriage. And the reason it was such a big celebration is that this particular prince, he wasn't married, and he needed to have a child to be the next king. Otherwise, there is no king. It has to be a biological line. So it was great anxiety for the country that the prince had no child, and that for the child to be authorized, it has to be from a properly married wife. So there was a marriage, and the whole idea of this is he will have a son who will be the next king. So among kingdoms, this is still going on today, although kingdoms are not very influential these days. But in the days of this Srimad Bhagavatam, this particular story, King Chitraketu, he was such a magnanimous, benevolent king. All the citizens loved him. Could you imagine having a leader where everyone loves you? And there was no political parties. He was the king until he decided to give it to his son. There was no votes. There was no campaigning. And he had such property. Today he would be a trillionaire. But he had no son. He had no children. So he felt so destitute that I'm not performing my duty because someone on behalf of my ancestors, my forefathers, somebody has to take over after me. So Narada Muni, Angira Muni, they came to visit him, and he said, I'm so sad. Everything is going super excellent in every way, but I don't have a child. So they gave him some blessings, some sadhana, said, you'll have a child, and his name will be Harshashoka, which means one who gives happiness and distress.
every child gets happiness in distress. So that was something acceptable.
So he had the child, but the particular queen that had the child that gave so much happiness to the father, she was celebrated by everyone. But then there were other queens
who burned with envy. It's the nature of the world. If you do something good, some people will love you and some people will be envious and hate you. And the more substantial good anyone does, the more they could be loved, and the more deep-seated people will envy and hate. It's always been like this in this world. They envied this queen so much. And envy can really cloud one's intelligence. You just become so victimized by this energy that they secretly poisoned the baby. The baby was dead. Now, everything the king was yearning for and suffering because he didn't have, he rejoiced when he got it. But to the degree you're attached to something, to that degree it hurts when it's taken away. And dukalaya mashashvatam. In this world, everything eventually is taken away. He was in total distress. He couldn't do anything. Then Narada Muni came by again. And Narada Muni, he told the little dead baby to wake up. He said, "Why have you left your father?" And the dead baby spoke transcendental knowledge. He said, "Actually, I'm not this body. I'm the eternal soul. I'm not dead. There's no possibility of the soul being dead. I was called to be in this body for some time due to my karma. Now I'm being called somewhere else. Who is my father? I've had so many fathers. I've had so many mothers. As my soul is transmigrating birth after birth after birth after birth after birth, aham bija pratapita, the Supreme Lord is our eternal father and mother." When Chitraketu heard this, he was enlightened. He totally took shelter of the Lord and became a great saint, transcendentalist, who was purely an instrument of compassion for everyone in this world. And that's how he ruled. And one day he was on a tour, and he happened to be around the Kailash area, and he saw Shankar, Lord Shiva. And it was really an interesting setting, because there were all these great yogis, swamis, ascetics, rishis, who had renounced everything of the world to live in the jungle for the purpose of detachment from egoistic material enjoyment, to attach themselves to the highest liberation. That's why they all live together in the jungle. And their ultimate hero, their guru, was Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva was among the greatest rishis and sages of the world. And he was sitting, giving them a lecture on the subject of renunciation. And as he was speaking, Lord Shiva's consort, Parvati, was sitting on his lap. And he was embracing her very affectionately in front of all these swamis, yogis, and rishis, telling them about renunciation. He was embracing her with so much love.
And the rishis, they were just listening. They were learning. They were taking notes in their minds of everything he was saying. But for Chitraketu, this was really, it was really unusual to give a class like this. So he just couldn't help himself from speaking what was in his heart. Lord Shiva, he's telling all these great renunciates about renunciation while he's embracing his wife on his lap. How is this? And Lord Shiva, he understood the heart of Chitraketu. So he just smiled. And all the great sages and rishis, they didn't say anything because it was all inconceivable to them. But Parvati did not like this. That who is this person to question the integrity of Shiva, my husband, my beloved? And she became quite angry. And she said, "You are a shameless fool. You call yourself a king. And you, because you are so proud of your power, your position, your beauty, your fame, you are so proud of all of this and all of your wealth that you have become so low and shameless that you think you can question the integrity of Shiva?" Therefore, I curse you to lose all your power, all your fame, all your prestige, and to take birth in the lowest family of demons. Now, if one of us tells you that, you know, you'll say, you know, who cares about you? But when Parvati says that, it's going to happen. Chitraketu bowed down to Parvati with folded hands and a grateful heart. The man was just cursed to die and become a lowly demon in hell. And he bowed down with gratitude. And he said, "Actually, I didn't mean to offend Lord Shiva. I was actually glorifying him in another way. But you didn't understand me properly. But still, you did curse me that I have to take a hellish, lowish birth of being an enemy of all the devotees. And if that is the wish of my Lord, if that is my destiny, I thank you. Now, with your permission, I will go to take my next birth." Tatenu kampam susamikshamano bunjana ivatmikritav vikamam. The fact is, Chitraketu Maharaj did make a serious mistake. And when the reaction came, instead of retaliating, because he did have the largest armies on the whole planet, he could have retaliated. He could have made excuses. He accepted even this most painful destiny as the grace of God. And he was happy. He was grateful. And he thanked the Lord and thanked Parvati and asked permission. "Now let me go on and carry what I'm supposed to do." When Lord Shiva saw his reaction, he became ecstatic. Narayana parasarve na kutachana vidyate swarga pavaga narakeshu apitulyata darshana. He said, "Just see the qualities of a devotee of Lord Narayana. All they want to do is serve. Whether they're in heaven, whether they're on earth, or whether they're in hell, makes no difference to them. Because they know in any situation, they can serve. Just see this Chitraketu Maharaj. He's happy to serve wherever the Lord wants him. In any situation. This is the glories of the true devotees. This is the highest liberation. Where there's love in the heart, we know that there is no situation, there is no predicament in the material, spiritual, or anywhere that we cannot serve. And our happiness comes through our service, not through the environment. Lord Shiva himself glorified Chitraketu as being the greatest Mahatma, the greatest saint. Well, then Chitraketu died and took his birth as Vritrasura, this really hideous, ugly, gigantic king of demons. And he's attacking the Lord's devotees because that's what he was supposed to do in this birth. And Indra, I'm going to go fast forward. There's going to be a tremendous battle between Indra and Vritrasura. And Vritrasura was just more powerful in every way than Indra, the king of heaven. Indra threw a thunderbolt at him, and Vritrasura just caught it and threw it back. And it hit Indra's elephant, and Indra's elephant vomited and fell down. And Indra was thinking, finished. There's nothing I could do against this unbelievable personality. He's just too much for all of us. There's nothing I could do. He gave up. And then Vritrasura, he spoke beautiful prayers to the Lord and incredible instructions to Indra that the greatest saints in the history of the world for thousands of years have recited these prayers of the demon for spiritual knowledge, direction, and enlightenment. Essentially, he tells Indra that you're supposed to kill me. Why are you afraid? You're afraid because you're so proud and you're so attached to all of your physical pleasures. I have no attachments. My destiny is that you're supposed to kill me and free my eternal soul from this demonic body of mine that I was destined to. And I'm going to go back to the eternally supreme liberated position of loving service to my Lord. I'm just yearning and longing to be connected with my Lord. I'm only doing all this demon stuff because that was my destiny. But in my heart, I'm constantly meditating on the beauty and the sweetness of my Lord and being an instrument of the Lord's compassion in everything I do. Kill me! You are so attached to your materialistic situation. You are so egoistic. Therefore, you're wreaked with fear of losing it. You're so attached to your physical body, you're afraid of death. You're so attached to your position and your power, you're ashamed that you're being defeated by me. But as for myself, my only attachment is that most beautiful, gracious, and loving Lord of my heart who's waiting for me, and I'm waiting for him. So give up your cowardice, your ego, and your attachment. You're going to win the battle,
and you're going to have to go on suffering, trying to protect your kingdom and enjoy your life. But I'm going back to the spiritual world. So who's going to be the winner of this battle? Defeat me, and I will attain supreme victory. This is a paraphrase of the dialogue. So here are the greatest devotees in the bodies of devas who are mixed up with all kinds of material attachments. And here is a person of the lowest possible birth in a gruesome body of a demon who's a paramhamsa, who's the greatest of saints, who's speaking transcendental knowledge to everyone. Because Vritrasura, despite his material condition, he was constantly tasting the nectar of loving service to the Lord, the nectar that is being described in this particular verse. Srila Prabhupada would sometimes quote the verse, Vaishnavera Kriyamudra Vigyana Bhujai, that we can't always understand the mind of a great soul. And this particular story very much highlights this principle. Is there any questions? Yes.
Thank you, Maharaj, for this very wonderful class. I was wondering what would be the main practical lesson for us to learn from this specific episode.
We shouldn't be attached. You should be very careful to judge great souls. Because, you know, throughout the whole theme of the story really is about learning how to respect others, even in difficult circumstances. From another perspective, from the deva's perspective, this came about when Indra was sitting in an assembly of the devas, the charanas, the Gandharvas, the Apsaras. He was being fanned with chamaras. He was sitting on a magnificent bejeweled throne. There were the most exalted people of the world chanting his praises because he was their king. And he became proud. Indra's a devotee. But even devotees can become proud. And if Krishna wants to show special mercy upon a devotee, somehow or other, will take away that pride. So here is Indra sitting in this incredible assembly of great personalities being worshipped. And Indra's guru walked in the assembly room, Brihaspati. And Indra was so infatuated by the recognition, by the glorification, by the worship that all of these people were giving him, that he was just totally absorbed in that. And when his guru, Brihaspati, came in the room, Indra just sat there and continued accepting all the glorification and worship. He didn't say anything negative. He just didn't say anything. He didn't have the common respect to stand up and greet a great person or offer him a seat because he had his seat. He was obviously thinking, I'm so important to all these people that I don't have to, you know, respect somebody else in this situation. Brihaspati saw the heart of Indra. And he understood exactly what was going to happen. That Indra was going to lose everything. So Brihaspati didn't curse, didn't say a word. He just understood destiny is going to take its course. And he silently left the room. After he left, Indra realized, what did I just do? This great sage, my guru, came in, and I was so absorbed in being glorified, in being respected myself, that I showed no respect for him. And he looked all over for him, but it was too late. And he knew at that time, I'm going to lose everything. Yasyaham anukrinnami harishe tathanam shanai. Srila Prabhupada would quote, that when the Lord wants to show compassion, he'll give you what you want. But when he wants to show very intimate compassion, he'll take away whatever is an obstacle to seriously taking shelter of his loving service. Now, from another perspective, we read in the Bhakti Ratnakar about when Rupa and Sanatan Goswami, when they were living as the home minister and the prime minister of the entire kingdom of Bengal, which went all the way down through South India and Orissa, Andhra Pradesh. It's very powerful. Actually, they couldn't go into Orissa, I'm sorry. But it was a very expansive. King Prataparudra was Orissa. But the king of Bengal was very powerful, mass provinces. And he gave so much power and wealth to Rupa and Sanatan, who were then Dabir Khas and Sakar Malik by name. They were multi-billionaires. Magnificent palaces. Have any of you ever been to their place, Ramakeli? There's Rup Sagar and Sanatan Sagar. It's where they would bathe in beautiful gardens. And we brought several thousand people there. And all of us only just took up one corner of the bathtub of Sanatan Goswami. And this is 500 years later. You could imagine what it was like when it was brand new. And they were the greatest scholars in the world, too. They knew all languages. Srinivasacharya's father was telling Srinivasacharya about how when he was young, he went to Ramkeli. And he went to this assembly house. Rupa and Sanatan would invite scholars or pundits to discuss scriptures from all over the different countries. And for that purpose, they had built magnificent assembly houses. And it was all their property. He said when everyone came, all the greatest scholars of the world would come and assemble there. And Rupa and Sanatan, they would sit, and they were so physically beautiful. They were like two cupids. And they had such knowledge. Their intellect was so sharp that it far surpassed all the scholars of the world. And they had such incredible wealth that they could create such symposiums. He said, what impressed him the most is even in that assembly, sitting in their exalted seats, if anyone came in, they would come down off their seats, they would greet that person, bow to him, arrange accommodations, arrange prasad, give everything.
He said, this is the most extraordinary person. One who has so much and is still humble like a blade of grass. Amani namanadena. Lord Chaitanya taught, true renunciation is this. True renunciation doesn't mean living like a beggar. True renunciation doesn't mean giving away all the physical things you have, including your cell phones. The beginning of renunciation is turning it off in class, though. Lord Chaitanya taught that true renunciation, whether you're a king or whether you're a swami living in the forest, real renunciation is amani namanadena. To give all respect to others and not to expect respect for oneself. And respect means, in practical terms, to honor the presence of God in everyone's heart. And according to that, our particular position of that person, we want to serve them. Prahlad Maharaj explains how a person is a servant of everyone. To those who are in an exalted, superior position, we serve them by submissively inquiring, taking guidance, instructions, and following those instructions. To those who are our equals, we serve them by becoming intimate, confidential, and true loyal friends in the service of the Lord. To help each other, to elevate each other in every way, physically, emotionally, spiritually. To those who are in a lesser position, in a sense, then we serve them by giving them all honor and respect through trying to do everything within our power to uplift them in every way. And for those who are very antagonistic, if there's nothing we could really do for them to help them, then we honor them and respect them and serve them by keeping a distance and offering respect to the spiritual essence, to the presence of the Paramatma within their hearts. But in this way, to every living being, we're servant. And we read about great souls like Vasudeva the leper. He had leprosy and there were worms eating his body away. And if a worm fell from his body, Vasudeva would offer his obeisances to the worm and very, very respectfully and tender, lovingly, he would just pick up that little worm and say, you know, here's something to eat. Here's some place to live, and place him right back in the body from where he came from. Now, we cannot imitate that. If we try to imitate the most exalted souls, we will either go insane or we will die. But the principle is how to give honor and service to everyone according to their position. When I lived in the jungle of Himalayas, one sadhu taught me this. He says, you have to serve everyone. You have to honor and respect everyone. And for the poison cobras and the scorpions and the leopards and the panthers, you don't serve them by embracing them, because they don't want you to embrace them. That's why they bite you, because they don't like you to do that stuff to them.
We give real service to them by just staying out of their way. And just from a distance, honoring that God is within their heart. So Rupa and Sanatan, even people who were so less than them in every way, in knowledge and strength and wealth and fame, even just a common person who just walked in, they would bow down. They would offer them a seat. They would arrange accommodations. They would arrange prasad personally, directly. And Srinivasacharya's father was saying, this is the greatest quality in a human being. The quality of respect. The quality of honoring others in service. And this quality really melts people's hearts. Srila Prabhupada had that quality. And it melted hearts. Here was Srila Prabhupada, great, great scholar of Vedanta. A Paramhamsa, most exalted saint, pure devotee, was living in Vrindavan, relishing the deepest nectar of the loving pastimes of Radha and Krishna. He came to the Lower East Side of New York. Before that, he was in the Bowery. And here he is, 70 years old, and he's with teenagers, or people in their early 20s. And here he is, a great scholar of Vedanta, who's living the highest, most moral, ethical, spiritual life. And he's with hippies. Prabhupada was bathing 3 times a day. These people hardly bathe 3 times a year. Prabhupada was living by the highest standards of spiritual morality. And these people, for them, you know, they were free sex. They were coming totally intoxicated with drugs and alcohol. They'd come in just after eating meat, gambling their lives away. And Prabhupada would honor them, respect them, and serve them. A 70-year-old man serving, honoring, showing love and affection to teenage hippies. And because of that quality, he totally melted their hearts. He conquered their lives. Because it wasn't his, it was God's love just manifesting through him in the most incredible way. And they were willing to accept anything he said. And that was Prabhupada's quality throughout. One of our god brothers tells the story that Prabhupada was sitting in a Guru Puja in Mayapur, and hundreds of people were chanting Guru Puja, glorifying him as their spiritual master. And one devotee had like a wound on his leg, a boil or something like that. And Prabhupada saw that, and while everyone was chanting and dancing and praising him, and he was sitting on a beautiful asana, he called that person over. So what is this? And he started writing down what kind of medical cure, because Prabhupada knew everything. Told him you get some ghee and you put some turmeric and you boil it together and put a little of this thing in, and then you put it in a compress and put it on your leg, and gave him some rupees to buy the ingredients. To a disciple. He just wanted, it was just his nature to serve, to love.
And he was only accepting honor and glorification just to serve everyone, to help them to make spiritual progress. Nothing for me. Everything is for the people so that they could progress. Whether it was cooking for them, whether it was putting medicine on them, or whether he was giving lectures to them, whether he was chastising them, whether he was accepting worship from them. It was all in the mood of honoring the soul and serving others. This is the basic principle of renunciation. This is the basic principle of human life and its purpose. Amani namana dena. And this story, from so many directions, is illustrating this. Indra lost everything because that's what he needed to do so that he could learn how to honor and respect others and not be infatuated by false pride. And now, however big or little we may be Indras within this world, this is the message of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Does that answer your question? Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.